Greetings, warriors, veterans, and America-loving citizens from sea to shining sea. Welcome to Frontlines of Freedom. Hoo-ah! I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. Two prominent climate scientists have taken on the new rules from the Environmental Protection Agency on cutting carbon dioxide emissions in electricity generation. They were arguing in testimony that the regulations would be disastrous for the country for no scientifically justifiable reason. Citing extensive data to support their case, William Harper, a professor emeritus in physics at Princeton, and Richard Lindzen, a professor emeritus in atmospheric science at Massachusetts Institute of Technology, argued that the claims used by the EPA to justify the new regulations aren't based on scientific facts, but rather political opinions and speculative models that have consistently proven to be wrong. These new rules will hurt all of us, including especially our military. A new wave of this idiocy is coming, folks. Contact your members of Congress and U.S. senators and fight it. Okay, joining me at the 50 caliber microphone today is Marine vet Skip Coriel. Weather has sure been nice here in Michigan, Skip. I'm guessing you spent some time outdoors?
Oh, definitely. I'm outdoors as much as I possibly can. Yesterday, I was picking peaches with one of my granddaughters, my five-year-old granddaughter, Hannah, and we made peach jam together, and today we had it with pancakes and peach jam. It was great.
That sounds awesome.
Yes. And Colonel, how many more waves of idiocy can our country handle?
Dude, that's a really serious question. I don't know that we can handle this.
Hope we're not going for the record here. I don't know what the record is.
Yeah, well, just pray about that one, bro. Okay, here's what we have for you today. On News and Comments by the Colonel, I'm going to discuss the attack on America on 9/11 that happened 22 years ago this coming Monday. Then Chief Warrant Officer Roland Ashby will contribute his warrant wisdom. General Ernie Ardino will discuss his time leading a very interesting group of non-Americans in combat in the Middle East. And then we'll learn about the very interesting retired U.S. Coast Guard cutter Sundu and its recent activities. And football co-host Quentin Roberts will join us to review last weekend's Service Academy football game.
Hey, troops, please invite your friends to join us at this time on this great radio station. Then head on out to frontlinesoffreedom.com and sign up for our free e-newsletter. And join the conversation at facebook.com/frontlinesoffreedom.
We really welcome your input to this show. Send us your ideas and comments through our website, frontlinesoffreedom.com, or do it on Facebook. And now it's time for news and comments by the Colonel on Frontlines of Freedom. We will, of course, start with the news. What's first, Skip?
Well, Colonel, General Viktor Shokin, a former Ukrainian prosecutor, divulged the involvement of then-Vice President Biden in his 2016 firing for investigating Burisma, the Ukrainian natural gas company where Hunter Biden served on the board. Shokin's termination came on the heels of Biden threatening to withhold $1 billion in aid money if he wasn't fired.
Gee, this sounds like a very criminal situation to me. I wonder why our FBI isn't involved in this and why charges aren't filed. We have a very strong and expensive relationship with Ukraine. Might it not be a good idea to see if there's any other criminal exchanges of money or power that are taking place?
And recent government spending data has dropped quite the truth bomb. The current administration is buying COVID-19 equipment and quickly bringing on board safety advisors. What does this mean for us taxpaying citizens? The Gateway Pundit and others suggest pandemic-era mandates with potential COVID lockdowns.
It's really clear that all the mandated shots and masks did nothing positive, but some negative for our nation. So far, no one in our government has acknowledged the horrible consequences of the ways the last COVID crisis was handled. It was horrible for our military. Look out, it's deja vu all over again.
I'm not doing that one again, Colonel. I'm going to pass on that one.
Me too, bro.
And former Army Captain Larry Taylor will receive the Medal of Honor for his heroic actions during the Vietnam War. He originally received a Silver Star for his actions. This is an upgrade of that award. Taylor, who was an AH-1 Cobra pilot between August 1967 and August 1968, is credited with the daring rescue of a small patrol of soldiers who were surrounded by the enemy. He made the rescue amid enemy fire and despite the fact his helicopter wasn't designed to carry extra people. Taylor's heroic actions took place over 55 years ago on June 18, 1968, near the hamlet of Apgocong. Taylor was leading a helicopter light fire team deployed in support of a reconnaissance patrol that had been surrounded. Amid the intense ground fire, the two Cobra gunships continued to make low-level attack runs for the next 45 minutes. During the fighting, Taylor was told that the plan to rescue the soldiers with a UH-1 Huey helicopter had been canceled because it stood almost no chance of success. Running low on fuel, with the patrol nearly out of ammunition, Taylor decided to extract the team using his two-man Cobra helicopter, a feat that had never been accomplished or even attempted. Taylor decided to land his Cobra under heavy enemy fire and with complete disregard for his personal safety, and had the trap patrol team grab onto his helicopter's rocket pods and skids. Taylor then carried them to safety without injury.
Wow, if I had been one of those guys, I would really be his admirer. That is incredible bravery. That's incredible. Frontlines of Freedom salutes Captain Taylor. God bless you.
And our maritime authorities repatriated 59 migrants to the Dominican Republic late last month following the interception of two overloaded vessels in Mona Passage, which connects the Atlantic Ocean to the Caribbean Sea. The first incident happened when a surveillance aircraft detected a suspicious vessel about 17 miles southwest of Puerto Rico. The vessel was intercepted by the Coast Guard cutter Confidence, who embarked 42 adult migrants, all of whom claimed to be Dominican Republic nationals. The following day, another suspect vessel was detected. A Customs and Border Protection aircraft located the vessel in waters northwest of Puerto Rico. The vessel was stopped by Customs Border Patrol officials and members of the Puerto Rico Police Joint Forces of Rapid Action. U.S. Coast Guard cutter Heriberto Hernandez arrived later and embarked the 17 migrants, all of whom also claimed to be Dominicans. The cutter, Heriberto Hernandez, transported all 59 adults to Dominican Republican territorial waters, where they were transferred to a Dominican Republic Navy vessel. These repatriations come just days after another interdiction of a smuggling vessel in Mona Passage. The U.S. Coast Guard cutter Donald Horsley stopped a 25-foot smuggling vessel north of Puerto Rico. It had 34 non-citizens on board. A biometrics review revealed that 5 had prior records or behaved in violation of our law. 29 were repatriated to the Dominican Republic, while the other 5 were taken to Puerto Rico for further processing. 3 of them are now facing charges for attempting to re-enter the country after a previous deportation for a conviction.
It appears that our Customs and Border Protection teams and our Coast Guard is permitted to do their job and is doing a great job at sea. Why in the world aren't our law enforcement folks permitted to do the same thing on our Mexican border? And while we're at it, let's ask our elected officials exactly why our southern border is wide open. How does that help America?
And when Congress created the PACT Act in 2022, it expanded the Department of Veterans Affairs health care and disability compensation available to Vietnam-era veterans who may have been exposed to the defoliant Agent Orange during the course of their service. The PACT Act addresses illnesses that may stem from exposures to toxins during military service, particularly Agent Orange, burn pits, and contaminated water on Marine Corps bases. It allows the VA to presume that a veteran's illness is service-connected if they served in a certain place at a certain time. As a result, veterans may be newly eligible for VA health care and/or monthly disability payments. If a veteran died of one of the service-connected conditions established in the PACT Act, the veteran's surviving spouse or children may also be eligible for VA dependency and indemnity compensation.
I've found the VA bureaucracy to be very hard to work with, but eligible veterans should find an attorney who knows how to focus on this and seek the deserved benefits. If you deserve them, you should get it. And that's the news. As Americans, it's our responsibility to ensure that our nation is well-run and on the right path. Politics and politicians are confusing, but we can work together. Concerned Veterans for America can assist you, even if you're not a vet, in getting involved and getting our nation back on track. Working with them is one of the things I do. Check cvafrontlines.com. That's cvafrontlines.com. This is Colonel Denny Gillum. Coming up on Frontlines of Freedom, I'll share comments by the Colonel and we'll enjoy some warrant wisdom. Then we'll talk with General Ernie Ardino. At these troops, take a break.
For over 10 years, Concerned Veterans for America has been fighting for better healthcare options for veterans. Thanks to our thousands of activists around the country, we've been able to expand options for veterans who use the VA for their care.
But there is more to be done, and you can help. We need voices just like yours to call on Congress to continue reforming the VA and empowering veterans with more choice over their care.
Learn more and join the movement by visiting cvafrontlines.com. That's cvafrontlines.com.
This is Marine Vet Skip Correa with your Home Defense Tip of the Week. Neighborhood Community Watch was established by the National Sheriff's Association back in 1972 in response to the rising crime of the 1960s. You can form your own Neighborhood Crime Watch by logging into www.nnw.org. Above all else, get to know your neighbors and work together as a community. This is just one more way to keep your family safe. For more useful tips on home and personal defense, visit homedefenseshow.com.
This is Colonel Denny Gillum. It's 20 minutes after the hour, and you are in formation and listening to the Front Lines of Freedom all across America. Now it's time for comments by the Colonel. This coming Monday is September 11th, the 22nd anniversary of the day America was attacked. The September 11 attacks, commonly known as 9/11, were four coordinated Islamist suicide terror attacks carried out by al-Qaeda against our nation on Tuesday, September 11th, 2001. That morning, 19 terrorists hijacked four commercial airliners scheduled to travel from the New England and Mid-Atlantic regions of the East Coast to California. The hijackers crashed the first two planes into the Twin Towers of the World Trade Center in New York City, two of the world's five tallest buildings at the time, and aimed the next two flights towards targets in or near Washington, D.C., in an attack on the nation's capital. The third team succeeded in crashing into the Pentagon, the headquarters of our Department of Defense, while the fourth plane crashed in rural Pennsylvania following a passenger revolt. The attacks killed nearly 3,000 people and instigated the multi-decade global war on terror. The attacks were televised live. The first impact was that of American Airlines Flight 11, which crashed into the North Tower of the World Trade Center complex in Lower Manhattan at 8:46 a.m. 16 minutes later, the World Trade Center's South Tower was hit by United Airlines Flight 175. Both 110-story skyscrapers collapsed within an hour and 41 minutes, bringing about the destruction of the remaining five structures in the World Trade Center complex, as well as damaging or destroying various other buildings surrounding the towers. A third flight, American Airlines Flight 77, crashed into the Pentagon at 9:37, causing a partial collapse. The fourth and final flight, United Airlines Flight 93, flew in the direction of the Capitol. Alerted to the previous attacks, the passengers retaliated in an attempt to take control of the aircraft, forcing the hijackers to crash the plane near Shanksville, Pennsylvania, at 10:03 that morning. Investigators determined that Flight 93's target was either the U.S. Capitol or the White House. Within hours of the attack, the Central Intelligence Agency determined that al-Qaeda was responsible. We formally responded by launching the war on terror and invading Afghanistan to depose the Taliban, which rejected the conditions of our terms to expel al-Qaeda from Afghanistan and extradite its leaders. Our invocation of Article 5 of the North Atlantic Treaty, an attack on one country is an attack on all of them, its only use to date, called upon allies to fight al-Qaeda. President George W. Bush responded by declaring a war on terrorism, which included the creation of the Department of Homeland Security and the invasion of Afghanistan. In his comments, President Bush said that we'd attack the terrorists wherever we found them and those who support them, but we never did that. Terrorists came from and were supported by many nations in the Middle East, and we never attacked any of them. So we went to war with no idea of exactly who the enemy was or what victory looked like, and clearly without a declaration of war by Congress. The result was not good. There's a lesson to be learned here. Let's not do any of that again. As we supported anti-Al-Qaeda Afghan tribes, they swept through Afghanistan, and Al-Qaeda leader Osama bin Laden disappeared into the White Mountains, eluding the captivity by Western forces. Although bin Laden initially denied any involvement, in 2004 he formally claimed responsibility for the attacks. Al-Qaeda's cited motivations included our support of Israel, the presence of our military bases in Saudi Arabia, and sanctions against Iran. The nearly decade-long manhunt for bin Laden concluded on May 2, 2011, when he was killed during a U.S. military raid after being tracked down to his compound in Pakistan. The war on Afghanistan continued for another 8 years until the agreement was made in February 2020 for American and NATO troops to withdraw from the country, and the ultimate cowardly and unprofessional abandonment of people and billions of dollars of state-of-the-art military equipment on August 30th, 2021, resulting in the return to power of the Taliban. Not including the 19 attackers, the attacks killed 2,977 people, injured thousands more, and gave rise to substantial long-term health consequences, while also generating at least $10 billion in infrastructure and property damage. It's been described by many as the deadliest terrorist attack in human history and remains the deadliest incident for both firefighters and law enforcement personnel in the history of our nation, killing 340 firefighters and 72 law enforcement. The loss of life stemming from the impact of Flight 11 secured its place as the most lethal plane crash in aviation history, followed by the death toll incurred by Flight 175. The destruction of the World Trade Center and its environs seriously harmed the economy and induced global market shocks. Many other countries strengthened anti-terrorism legislation and expanded their powers for intelligence agencies. Cleanup of the World Trade Center site, colloquially called Ground Zero, took 8 months and was completed in May 2002, while the Pentagon was repaired within a year. After delays in the design of a replacement complex, construction of the One World Trade Center began in November 2006. It opens its doors on November 2014. Memorials to the attack include the National September 11 Memorial and Museum in New York City, the Pentagon Memorial in Arlington County, Virginia, and the Flight 93 National Memorial at the Pennsylvania crash site. Osama bin Laden orchestrated the attacks. As I said, he initially denied involvement, but later recanted his false statements. Shortly before our presidential election, bin Laden used a taped statement of publicly acknowledging al-Qaeda's involvement in the attacks on our nation. Bin Laden said he had personally directed his followers to attack the World Trade Center and the Pentagon. The U.S. never formally indicted bin Laden for September 11 attacks, but he was on the FBI's most wanted list for the bombings of our embassies in Dar es Salaam, Tanzania, and Nairobi, Kenya. After a 10-year manhunt, President Obama announced that bin Laden was killed by our troops. In the future, we can respond to terrorists and other evil enemy activity with our special ops teams, but let's not go to war again without a congressional declaration of war with the whole country behind us. And let's never forget 9/11. And those are my comments for today. This is Colonel Denny Gillum. You're listening to Frontlines of Freedom. Now we get to enjoy some warrant wisdom with Chief Warrant Officer Roland Ashby. What do you have to share this week, Roland?
So there's about 260,000 current and former service members that have filed lawsuits against 3M for the defective earplugs that they were issued in Iraq and Afghanistan between 2003 and 2015. And now there's a $6 billion settlement, and each service member could get up to about $15,000. According to the settlement, claimants can either receive a lump sum up front or apply for an evaluation that could lead to a higher amount down the road. Hearing problems have been a common problem for U.S. troops who served in the Middle East, in part because of the blast from roadside bombs. The explosions were much closer than in previous wars, and the rate of surviving those blasts were also higher. This in turn has resulted in many more service members dealing with hearing loss and traumatic brain injury. So if you're suffering from hearing issues, 3M's going to give you a whole $15,000 or thereabouts. I guess something's better than nothing. My big takeaway, our government is also to blame for providing defective protective gear to our troops. We have a responsibility as a nation to protect our troops. So don't just take the 3M settlement if you were affected. Make sure you're also engaging with the VA to get medical help and also any potential disability payments that you may now be entitled to. For Frontlines of Freedom, I'm Chief Warrant Officer Roland Ashby. Back to you, Colonel.
Thanks, Roland. I really appreciate your comments. Straight ahead on Frontlines of Freedom, we'll discuss fighting with allies in the Iraq War with General Eric Ardino. Then we'll discuss the U.S. Coast Guard cutter Sundu. It's really cool. All this is coming up. I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. You're standing tall with the Frontlines of Freedom. I'll be right back. Troops, it's time for some boxing. Box three rounds, take a break, and then box another three. Then stand at ease.
HelpVet.net is a national help center helping the military community with all of your everyday needs. Whether you need a realtor, an attorney, health-related services, or information on retirement planning, financial resources, or more, our vast network of hand-picked qualified service providers are waiting to help you. With up-to-date military news and resources, you can find answers to all of your daily needs at HelpVet.net. HelpVet.net wants to thank you for your service, and may God continue to bless the U.S. of A.
Friends, there's not too many things I enjoy more than helping veterans and eating great beef jerky. Now I can do both. My good friends at Tango3.org and America's Best Beef Jerky use the highest quality beef to make the best jerky I've ever tasted. Trust me, I've eaten a lot. But that's not all. They give 100% of the profit to vetted veterans programs, mental health and suicide prevention. Go to americasbestbeefjerky.com and order now. And at checkout, check the Frontlines of Freedom promo code. Truth, welcome back to our nation's largest military veteran talk radio show, Frontlines of Freedom. I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. Truth, please do send me your comments and questions. Email me through frontlinesoffreedom.com. So it's an honor to welcome General Ernie Ardino. Like me, he's a West Point grad, about a few years after me, just a kid. I think his most interesting assignment was when he was deployed to Iraq and commanded a team of combat advisors embedded with the 4th Division of the Iraqi Army, just in my opinion. His brigade was formed entirely from Kurdish guerrilla units, remissioned to conduct counterinsurgency in and around Ballinkirk. I don't know anybody else that's ever done that. So this should be a fun talk. Welcome to the show, Ernie.
Danny, it's my pleasure. Thanks for asking me to be on the show.
Ernie, tell us about your time in Mother Army. When and why did you want to go to West Point? What attracted you?
Well, you know, I had all my uncles, my father, they had all enlisted, and, you know, they all did a tour, you know, and got out and got on with their lives. But they all spoke highly of their time in the military. And truth be told, they all kind of missed it. And yet I had a distant cousin. I guess it would be my second cousin, because my father's first cousin, he was the only one of my family that went on to a career in the military. And when the rest of my family settled in the New England area, after Korea, he settled out in Ohio. And I really idolized this guy. I would call him even as a little kid a couple of times a year. He fought all through World War II, went in on D-Day with 1st Division onto appropriately named Red Beach, 3 Purple Hearts in Germany, Purple Heart in Korea, Battlefield Commission. And only years later, after I uncovered a recently declassified document over at INSCOM, I found out he was recruited for a team to infiltrate into Pyongyang ahead of our invasion. And anyhow, he had been somebody I looked forward to and a real inspiration. And I always, from the age of 10, wanted to go to West Point. The family had done a picnic there. And on that day, I got fascinated with the place and decided that's where I wanted to go.
Okay, that works. And obviously you did. What branch did you commission when you graduated?
Commissioned in armor. And my roommate and I, we debated this long and hard over, you know, all through the evening, past taps. We were supposed to have our dream sheets turned in. Now, as I recall, there were 17 choices. I mean, those are your desires. You know, they're interesting, but not dispositive as far as the Army's concerned. But the two of us went back and forth between infantry and armor. We crossed out the other 15, essentially, and those are our top choices. And I picked armor, he picked infantry, and that's what we got.
Okay. And you obviously did serve in the armor for a while. But one of the interesting things that I noticed is that you needed to get out for some family reasons, but you stayed in the guard and you deployed as a guardsman. So you had combat in Iraq despite this break. Talk a little bit about that.
I was off active duty for about 6 years, but I joined the guard because I didn't really, you know, want to get off active duty at that time. But it's private side stuff I wanted to address. And so I decided to go to law school. And anyway, I got a call from the Pentagon in my fifth year. And they asked me if I would consider going back on active duty, and I did, and that was active guard title 10, and then all kinds of crazy things. I got selected for an Army Congressional Fellowship, and then I got selected to command out of Fort Lewis, and both 3rd Infantry Division and 25th Infantry Division. Then over to the War College, a few times on the Army staff, and then all this was active duty time. And then I was at the National War College, and my class was about 220 folks. 20 of them were foreign students, and this was class of 2003. So we entered in 2002, and we had 9/11 upon us at this point, and I elected to concentrate in Islam in the Middle East. That was my concentration. And one of my professors was a guy named Peter Galbraith, Ambassador Peter Galbraith. And his claim to fame, aside from being an ambassador, was he'd snuck into Iraq in 1988 after the gassing of Halabja, the Kurdish village of Halabja. Uh-huh. And the world's largest chem strike on civilians. And he became something of a Kurdish scholar. And that example of his inspired me to refine my concentration to Kurdish history and issues. And lo and behold, the Army picked me later to command teams going in, embedded with the Kurdish Peshmerga, the Kurdish fighters in Iraq.
And that's going to be cool. We need to talk about that. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. We're talking with General Ernie Ardino. Ernie, talk about your time working with a Kurdish promotion. That's got to be one of the most unique things that I've ever talked to a guy about. Take us there.
Yeah, well, thanks. You know, they're our greatest allies over there. These are people who, when Islam spread in the 7th century, there are only two areas, really, in the Middle East that weren't also Arabized at the same time they were Islamized in the jihads of the 7th, 8th century, 9th century. They spread all the way up, across Spain, Sicily, southern coast of Italy, et cetera, et cetera. Anyhow, there were only really two areas that weren't Arabized in the process, and that would be Iran, Persia. They retained a Persian identity, and Kurdistan. They're ethnically Kurdish, and they know it. They identify Kurds first and everything second. And of course, they've been the object of genocide and repression for generations, largely, if you ask them, because they're Kurds. And we linked up with them, and they just absolutely love Americans. They absolutely love the United States. It was really just, I think, the high point of my career to be embedded with these guys, live with them, and become considered a Peshmerga.
That is an honor, because I was a Mideast war planner and I did a lot of study in that too. And what you're describing is incredible. And I think most people don't realize that that whole part of the world is tribal. They're not national, they're tribal, and they are who they are. And the Kurds were the Kurds. And if you weren't that and you didn't respect them, they didn't care about you. Is that a fair statement?
Yeah, they're hellacious fighters, and yet they're incredibly accommodating. They're 98% Muslim, but they've got Kurdish Christians, Kurdish Jews. They've got pre-Christian religions that are still being practiced up in the mountain pockets. And if you go to Masif, which is north of Erbil up in the mountains, the hometown of the Barzanis, the Barzani National Memorial has three domes to it to represent Islam, Christianity, and Judaism. Where else are you going to see something like that in the Middle East? And on top of it, Denny, in this war to defend humanity, as I call it, the war against ISIS, since 2014, there would be no war without the Kurds. They were the West's main effort in this war to turn back and destroy ISIS and its ideology.
Well, and they really did a good job. We've got about a minute left. Summarize your time with them.
Yeah, well, we linked up. We had to establish rapport with them. That's the first order of business. And let me tell you, that's kind of a tall order to do when everybody around you has a lifetime of combat experience. My counterpart had been wounded 8 times in combat fighting Saddam Hussein's troops and other jihadi groups before we even knew about jihadi groups in any practical way. I was with him when he got hit his ninth time, which was an assassination attempt on him, and arguably me, since I was with them. That was launched from within the Iraqi army, by the way, on us. And yet they treat Americans like rock stars. We lost 22 Peshmerga that year and had 60 wounded.
Wow. We should probably do two whole shows just on that. That's cool. But we've got to move on. There's more to discuss about General Audino and what he's done. So he's going to stay with us. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. Yep, troops, it's push-up time. I want you to do 103 push-ups. That's how many I do, well, twice this week. Then take a break, but stay in the area. We'll be right back.
Friends, Adam here, Patriot Foods, U.S.-only company. Frozen fruits and vegetables straight from our dirt, not overseas. Support the U.S. farmer. When you shop at PatriotFoods.com, we give back to a military family in need. We got to take care of each other, my friends. We have to. So important. 10% off, PatriotFoods.com. 10% off, promo code FREEDOM, and shop today.
This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. This is the final formation for this hour. We're continuing our conversation with General Ernie Audino. Ernie, we discussed your time in uniform, particularly your cool time in the Middle East. You've seen a lot. Our military and our nation are facing some incredibly huge challenges right now. So let's talk about a few of them. I'd like to start with China, if that's okay with you.
Absolutely.
You know, China is, in my opinion, our major threat in the world. And we're not doing anything. I live in Michigan, and China's building a factory about 30 miles north of me, and the governor's welcoming them. I mean, they're our enemy, aren't they?
Yeah, I mean, I would say it that way. They're certainly an adversary. And you know, Denny, you know that the nature of war is unchanging, but it's the character of war that changes over the ages, and that's the characters, you know, how we fight this war. You know, there were wars that were fought millennia ago with axes and arrows and shovels, and then sort of how we made our livelihoods back then with those tools, and yet we used them for war. In the industrial age, we found a way to mechanize our armies and deploy them almost as if it was a mass production exercise. And now we're into the information age, and war is waged, you know, in the internet and with other tools that we use in the information age. And China is, in fact, leveraging many of these information age capabilities. And on top of it, by the way, you know, you may remember there are four elements of national power. Military is one, but so is economic, so is informational, and so is diplomatic power. Those are all levers that a nation can use to impose its will on others. And China is very deliberately trying these levers, applying these levers to our interests around the globe. And yet we act like these are things that are not happening or that they're not against our interest. China should be our number one priority in our national defense strategy.
You know, well said. They are using all the things that we probably taught them over the years. And certainly we know all that, but somehow right now we are incredibly naive. And indeed, our military is not as combat ready as it should be, given the fact that we might need them against China for all kinds of reasons. Is it a leadership thing like I think it is?
Well, ultimately it is. I mean, you know, a leader is responsible for everything that happens or fails to happen in its unit. And if we have declining standards, if we have recruiting challenges because nobody wants to join a woke military, if we have leadership that continue to define this recruiting challenge as something other than it really is, they try to blame it on a declining pool of available manpower from which to recruit. But here's the fact of the matter. In World War II, Denny, we fielded 11, 12 million men under arms at some point over the time of World War II. The population at the time was about, let's say, 140 million people. Today, our military is what, about maybe 2 million people, right?
Yeah.
Our population is 340 million people. It's nearly three times the entire population of the United States had in World War II. Yet we could field 11, 12 million people then. But now fielding 2 million is a challenge. It's not because we have a smaller recruiting pool. It's absolutely not that. It has to be something else. And I assert nobody wants to join a woke military.
Well, I wouldn't want to, would you?
Not at all. No. And you know, we want to pretend war is something that it's not. It is a violent contest of national will. And the basic recipe for prevailing in combat is the same as it was since Christ was a corporal, and that is by killing people and breaking stuff. And we want to say it's something else.
That's right. I have frequently said the only reason to have a military is to kill people and break things. And if we're really good at it, bad guys will stay away from us. That's called deterrence. Is that a summary of what you're saying too?
It is. You don't deter anything by showing weakness. You know, nobody's afraid of a bunch of leaf eaters and herbivores. But before we get too far off of China, I got to say this one thing. China is not what people think it is. China has its vulnerabilities, more so perhaps than anybody else. China's got a birth rate problem.
Yes.
It's got a geographic problem. And it has a massive economic problem. And let me just zero in on that one, all right, if you don't mind.
Please.
We see this tremendous opulent Chinese wealth, right? I mean, we saw the Winter Olympics, the opening of the Winter Olympics several years ago, and China was rumored to spend $1 billion on the opening night. And I remember people saying, we couldn't do that in the United States. Well, we probably couldn't. We probably couldn't. But you know what? The wealth in China is largely concentrated in a belt that's about 100 kilometers wide along the coastline, i.e. where the trading communities are. The rest of the geographic landmass, which is ironically 80% of the landmass, 80% of China subsists on a per capita of $3,600 per annum. That's poverty level. The middle class, which is an indicator of a stable economy, one of the indicators, is 5% of the economy. That is not a condition for a stable economy. China is now, its strategic asset has been its near endless supply of cheap labor. But guess what? Labor costs always rise. And now China is losing labor to lower cost labor providers throughout other portions of Asia. And I'll give you an example. Japan. Do you remember Japan in the 70s? If we picked up tools or in the 60s, 70s, picked up tools, you know, or toys with a made in Japan sticker, we thought it was cheap and whatever. Well, guess what? We were wrong. It had good quality and it was lower cost.
Yes.
And then the headlines came, the coming Japanization of America. I remember that headline specifically. We were afraid as Americans that our entire auto industry, for example, the heart of our manufacturing in this country, our auto industry was going to be subsumed by this Japanese economic and production juggernaut. Well, guess what? Japan, whose strategic forte was its near endless supply of cheap labor, lost that forte because its labor pool, the cost of labor rose. It lost that and nobody fears Japan anymore. Well, China is charting a similar path. And at some point, the good communists in Beijing will do what good communists do. And they're already doing this, redistributing wealth elsewhere into the geography of China. And guess what? At some point, you're going to see the Chinese living in this belt that trades with the West over the Pacific. They're going to realize their continued good welfare depends more on healthy relations with the West than it does with Beijing. And this is where many are saying we're going to begin to see a socio-political crisis inside China.
And yeah, I think we're starting to see that now. And I agree with you totally. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. We're talking with General Ernie Alzino. Ernie, we're running out of time. What are you doing now? You are active in Florida, I know. Talk to us about what you're doing.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm the district director for Congressman Mike Waltz, a Green Beret, an old friend of mine, and I helped him with his first campaign. I was one of his surrogates, and He got elected, I'm happy to say. And, you know, he was not a politician. He was a Green Beret and decided to bring his mission focus to Capitol Hill. He felt the call of duty and he stepped up and he really sacrificed to do it. And after he got elected, he asked me to stay on and I run his forward operations and I do a lot of his help with his national security and foreign policy stuff.
So you aren't bored. You must be really staying busy because he's a sharp guy and he's doing good things for our country. You got to love it or you wouldn't still be there, right?
No, I absolutely love it, except for when I have to get back to the swamp, which is why I have a better job than he does.
Yes, indeed. And I think by swamp, you mean Washington, D.C.
Yes, sir.
That's awesome. I so appreciate your comments there. Since he's a congressman, he's obviously going to be running for re-election, and you're going to be busy helping him do that, too, I'm sure.
Yeah, I will.
Ernie, thank you. Thank you for your great comments, for your service to our nation, and for what you're doing now. You continue to work hard to make our nation a better place and a safer place. I really appreciate you. We need to stay in touch. We've got to stay friends.
Yeah, absolutely. Danny, call anytime. We'd love to stay in comms with you. Thanks for hosting this podcast and radio show. You know, we need to hear more of what you have to say. You know, we need to hear the truth. We need to see reality as it really is, not on a fantasy.
Boy, do we need to tell the truth out there. You're right. This concludes the first hour of the show. We're going to start the second hour learning about the U.S. Coast Guard gunner Sundu. It's really cool. Then Quentin Roberts will review last weekend's Service Academy football games. Of course, we'll conclude with our weekly mailbag, military history, and our self-defense report. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Front Lines of Freedom. Troops, it's time for pull-ups. Do 30 good ones, then grab some protein, rehydrate with water, and finally, put a big smile on your proud-to-be-an-American face and send me your thoughts by email or on Facebook.